in the distant past of this life, I thought that emotional patterns were developed by me and others in response to stimuli, things that we experienced in our day-to-day environments. A lot of my education seemed to indicate that was true. Stimulus response. Using this model, though, if we experience the presence of a stress, let's say there's a saber-toothed tiger, there's a boogeyman in the closet, something of that sort, we would say, oh, yeah, okay, that's what I'm afraid of. But we'd have to imagine that sort of thing existing in the first place. So if we experience the threat, that's the stimulus, we would either decide to fight it, you know, and this is not really a very cognitive sort of thing, this is a very reactive sort of thing, we would fight it if we somehow processed it or calculated that we could defeat that threat. If we could dominate the threat, we would fight it, we would advance toward it. But on the other hand, if we process the information, that signal saying, no, not going to be able to beat this thing, we would run away, we would flee. Hence, fight or flight. That's the idea. This kind of thinking that I had way back when presupposes that a child is born kind of like a clean slate, right? Like there are no inputs. As soon as that baby comes out, that's when all of this processing of environmental signals starts to happen. Well, of course, we do recognize that the baby is going to have some sort of genetically similar component compared to their two parents. So besides having genetic material delivered to the baby, pretty much everything else was considered. Nothing occurred in utero or before, and now life was starting for that little child. We know that that thinking is completely false. It is not true. What is really recognized nowadays that maternal and paternal inputs are impacting and accumulating in the consciousness of that baby from conception on. So if the mother is experiencing it, or if there is emotionality in the environment from the father, that baby is going to be processing those environmental signals. Depending on what you think, and I subscribe to what is in Christ Returns Revealed Startling Truth, makes perfect sense because I see this evidenced with other people, that the consciousness of the father and the consciousness of the mother will be inputted to the baby, and that will be part of the consciousness of the baby. When you look around and see various people who are reproducing with high vibration people, oftentimes the baby has a high vibration. So that's, to me, an important idea for people who are considering having children. It's like you don't want to just think of a sperm equaling a sperm. It is an issue of your consciousness and the consciousness of your partner. So you go, okay. An ovum is not just an ovum. There's a consciousness that I think needs to be taken into consideration. When I've had clients talk to me about their inability to conceive, I talk to them about consciousness. And if they could elevate their consciousnesses, what they bring forth into physical manifestation is going to be more wonderful, if you will, than if they bring something else into physical manifestation when they're operating at a much lower level of awareness. They seem to think that, so that feels like a good idea. But really, when you consider it, who's to say that the only information coming to us is coming from our father and our mother? Like, okay, we're starting at father, mother, and conception. And so that is the manufacturing process of this new baby. And whatever occurs from the moment of conception and during that 9 months of pregnancy, that's what's going to result in the physical manifestation of the baby. The genetic traits, for instance, are coming from that point in time. Are they really? My mother and my father were not the originators of their physical characteristics. They came from their forebears. So if I look at my parents' ancestors, it's like, yeah, they had physical characteristics that are similar to mine. When we think in terms of generational issues, and I think this is a real, real important area, we consider that images plus emotions have been transmitted along with the genetic material. Not just, you've got the same hair color as your great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. No. I'm thinking we also have some images plus emotions from them as well. I've read that some people involved in this area suggest that we are impacted and influenced on a daily basis by images plus emotions of 3 generations, 7 generations, 10 generations, and some people even believe 20 generations of our ancestors are influencing. The energy of all those ancestors are able to influence us today. Most people are familiar with this idea of looking at a photo album. Oh, this is the baby right after she or he was born. And then look at little baby in nice clothes and little white shoes and bow tie. And this photo album right on up to the last time we added a photo to that album. But just imagine, it's like, no. It's not that just that one photo album. You're only talking about a real small unit of time. There's a larger unit of time, maybe generations. Oh, so you've got to add another photo album that really is to be included energetically in your photo album, your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on. So all those images plus emotions really do belong in our photo inventory that influence us, that we have access to? I think so. In my family, I work on the family tree. My brothers were doing that some years ago, and after I went to Ireland, I became interested in it. And so I took that over. I'm the most computer proficient of the 3 brothers. So it's interesting to me. So look at this. Imagine this, that your family tree is a funnel. You could put you on the bottom of that funnel, or you could put yourself at the top of that funnel, almost like you're the tip of the mountain, or you're the final distillation processed being on the bottom of it. You know, that would be the ideal scene, right? So if we had that funnel of 3 or more generations of ancestors, images, plus emotions being delivered into us, into our consciousness, so they are available and sometimes even impinge upon us, maybe to our disadvantage, you're like, So let's just only consider 3 generations, your parents, your grandparents, and your great-grandparents. That would go back, I'm guessing from my experience, about 100 years, maybe a little bit more. So that's just 100 years. When you consider 100 years in the span of human existence, that is some kind of small. That's a very, very teeny unit of time. But just going back 100 years or so, think of the calamities, the stresses, the dangers, the threats, the pain, the suffering that might have been experiencing or occurring in the world as a whole, right? World wars, conflicts between countries and religions, kind of like today. And, you know, struggles for survival and so on, political unrest, all kinds of things of that sort. And imagine that our relatives, our ancestors, were experiencing those things. They were taking in the energy of those environmental signals, translating them as best they could. They were trying to protect themselves from it. They're trying to hold on to the good stuff and let go of the bad stuff that wasn't serving them. And they were doing this more or less well. And you go, man, oh man, that's intense. That's really intense. And because we're a land, the United States, we're a land of immigrants, I'm thinking very few people migrated to this country because they were bored with how easy it was to be successful in the old country. It was more likely it was impossible to live there. Anything was going to be better than the conditions they were experiencing. Even though the new world was unbelievably unknowable, the certainty was off the charts intense. They go, I got to go for it. Anything is going to be better. And I've heard it's the land of opportunity, so let me get on a ship and go. When we look at these generations, and I do like the idea of a distillation process, because I think the goal would be that we would take the best characteristics of our mothers, the best characteristics of our fathers, and they would have taken the best characteristics of their mothers and fathers, and so on, down through the ages, and who we represent today, and our children represent, even to a greater extent, is the best qualities of our entire bloodline. That would be fantastic if that were true. I think that's the goal. Whether it is actualized or not is a whole different thing. But, oh, yeah, you can. It would be nice if my children ignored my lower vibration characteristics and only chose or assimilated the higher. I think the chances of that happening are somewhat slim, though. I think we would have taken in a whole bunch of characteristics that maybe they don't necessarily serve us as well as we wished. One of the reasons for that, survival, the survival instinct. Survival of the individuality, survival of identity, seems to be a primary drive. You can pretty much forget every other need we have. If we don't survive, it's like, well, game over, as far as a physical being is concerned. And you go, oh, yeah. So, because survival is so important to us, I think we acquire, hold on to as well, those characteristics that help us in the identification of threats, dangers, risks, pain, suffering, and information about reacting to those threats, and so on. All of it designed to trying to keep us alert, trying to keep us alive, so we can survive. And some of those characteristics, right? Fear. I'm afraid. Or anger. You just heard the fear is the environmental signal that or emotion that is fear is turned on by environmental signals of a perception of a threat. Perception being the key word in that sentence. And you'd go, oh, yeah. And what do? Well, we run like crazy or we fight like crazy. Or we have doubts. I'm a little hesitant, which is a fear and a tentativeness on a lower level, but nonetheless dedicated to our survival. I think we probably could say grief teaches us. What's it teach us? Losing things that we value is not much fun. Not much fun. It doesn't feel good. I don't like the feeling of that loss. It hurts. So, survival says, don't lose things that are valuable to you. And as our awareness elevates, in my point of view, there is no loss. If we want the vibration, we can have it back just by focusing on it. I'm no mathematician, but I'm going to give it a try. In a purely mathematical setting, we would say that one half of our DNA comes from our mothers, half comes from our fathers. But one half of our fathers and mothers come from each of their parents. And their parents, each of half of theirs, came from their parents. So in this simple mathematical view, I'm definitely overlooking the idea of gene dominance and recessiveness, you know, what's going to come to the fore in terms of certain hair colors and probably even emotional things. I'm just going to leave that off the table entirely. So in this simple scenario, we could say that our DNA is 50% from each parent, but since 50% is from their parents, we could say our DNA is 25% from each of our four biological grandparents. Or if you wanted to say, no, 12.5% is from each of our eight grandparents. Or if you wanted to go to great-great, 6.25% of our DNA comes from our great-great-grandparents. But then we get back into the original question. What other energy patterns could be transferred to us from our ancestors that are not so visual, not so observable, not so measurable? It's believed and it's taught that human beings are born with certain fears. As soon as we come out of the womb, we have certain fears. Okay? And some of these are fear of the dark, fear of falling, fear of loud noises, and fear of snakes. There may be others that I've read about, but let's just say having those fears is normal in human beings. But you'd go, wait a minute. When I came out of the womb, how would I know to have bad feelings about the dark? I just spent 9 months in semi-darkness, maybe complete darkness, and I don't have much experience with falling. I may have had some experience with loud noises, depending on what was going on in the environment outside, but snakes? How would I know to be afraid of these things? As far as I can identify, there is no stimulus in any of these cases. Here's another thing. I know it used to scare my sisters. Spiders. Add spiders to the list. How do we know to be afraid of spiders? Unless we had experiences with them. Maybe the experiences we had with them was not really us. We didn't actually have the experiences. Somebody else in our bloodline had these experiences. And this, from a survival standpoint, is passed on to us. One of the interesting things, so over the years I read an article about this fear of falling, not as it pertains to human beings, but as it pertains to birds. Said, yep, when birds come out of the shell in the nest, they have a fear of falling. It's designed that way because they don't have any feathers yet. You don't want them to walk to the edge of the nest and go, well, I think I'll just, whoops, and fall to their deaths. So that fear of falling keeps the little birds away from the edge of the nest. And so the parent birds obviously are bringing food back in the, as they're developing. Then they've got feathers and strength in their wings and they're ready for flight. Oftentimes, they need their mother or maybe the father as the jump master. Come over here, little bird. Take a look over here. Isn't this... Wow. And a whack in the butt with a wing or a foot, and that bird starts falling and then starts flying. Like, fear of falling is a survival thing designed to protect the birds. How clever of divine consciousness. Back to human beings. I just saw a video the other day of a Swedish scientist. This was in the New York Times, had an article and a video, an interview. This Swedish scientist is doing research on Neanderthal DNA. So he's got Neanderthal bones, and he's extracting their DNA and doing genome studies on it. And he has identified that some human beings living today have the same genetic makeup, these chunks of, I'll say, Neanderthal DNA, while other human beings don't have them at all. His supposition is that some of our ancestors commingled with Neanderthals along the way, and they're walking the earth. They're just like you and me. I think this is interesting to me. Interesting. Over the years, I've used the expression of somebody getting angry or really flipping into a very ugly rage as going caveman. Wow, that guy went caveman. Now, I think maybe that tendency to go caveman means that the person is actually accessing energy from a previous generation and applying it in a present time incident. I'm supposing there's going to be some sort of historical accuracy to certain movies that we've watched. Braveheart, for instance. I'm told, and my genealogy supports it, that besides Ireland, there is, this is on the Costello side, there is Scott ancestry as well. So now if I'm Scottish or Irish, and you look at the Celts, and you look at Braveheart, and some of the behaviors of some of those people, you go, ooh, they definitely had the capability of going caveman. Interesting. Sometimes working with clients in difficult situations, it appears to me that some of them get stuck in loops of thoughts, emotions, that they just go around and around and around and seem not to be able to break free of these loops, almost like a programming loop goes beginning to end. And it makes me think of images plus emotions were planted in their consciousnesses very early, maybe way before this lifetime, but certainly in this lifetime. And these images plus emotions are so pervasive that it's so easy to trigger them, it's so easy for them to access them, that their self-talk, boom, keeps them spinning. Really, the purpose of energy modalities like the Healing Codes and the EFT and others really is to be able to interrupt those kind of patterns, decrease their influence on us, so we're operating more in present time as compared to some sort of historical influence that has been passed down through the centuries. But these clients are, and this pertains to all of us, not just my clients, myself and everybody else that I've ever spoken to. If we're replaying a self-talk, things that have been heard, almost like heard in quotes, heard by somebody, my parents, my grandparents, my great-great-parent, somebody along the line, then those words with the attached emotions can be destabilizing us. When they get activated, when they get tripped, the switch gets flipped, they get turned on, it's like, are you in present time? We could look at people, sometimes even notice a change in facial structure. We go, wow, who is that? Who is that? And I would suggest that some of these previous energy patterns, some of these roots to our dominant emotions, just made themselves known to us. If there were a way for people to effectively interrupt the loops, you know, and stop being disempowered by information that is pumping images and perceptions of threats into their systems. So they're not really functioning on a higher cognitive level because they're reacting. I'm fighting and fleeing, and I'm fighting and fleeing, and I'm fighting and fleeing. Fight or flight is great for about 30 seconds or 60 seconds or 90 seconds, but definitely not as a lifestyle. But if we practice accessing those old energy patterns, those dominant emotions, those roots, and they become easier and easier and easier to access them. One of the challenges over the years has been this idea of dealing with people who didn't express their emotions. Here, take a baseball bat or some other instrument and hit a pillow. Practice getting angry. Practice getting angry. Just practice getting angry, and that will release it from you. Time out. Time out. Does it release it from me, or does it give me practice and make it easier for me to release anger onto something other than a pillow? Like, I think when you look at video games nowadays and how video games play into drone warfare and other forms of man's inhumanity to man, you say, Well, I've killed so many in Zombie Warrior 3 that killing somebody using a U.S. military device is just the same. Except, on the other end, real people, women and children and men are being killed, infrastructure destroyed. It's like, practicing killing, practicing anger, just makes us better at going caveman. Does it make us enlightened? Like, maybe, breaking that habit is a better thing. I like this image of consciousness as everything, of course, but consciousness as soil. And I say, these energy patterns planted in the soil of our consciousness, they have an impulse to survive. They are driven to grow and survive. All created things want to move in that direction of growing and surviving. Consciousness forms want to grow and survive. Not just weeds, even though these things are like weeds in the garden. They are like weeds in the garden. They're like parasites in the body. Like, they will want to grow and want to survive. And part of growing and surviving is to be able to resist opposing energy patterns. And so if you've got an energy pattern of hate or fear, and you're going to bring in love or courage, like, wait a minute, those are opposing. And hate and fear think they're designed to help us survive. And today we would say, you know what? There's a higher survival potential in love and courage. And these two other impulses, hate and fear, go, I'm sorry, I was here first, no. And those competing ideas, those opposing energies, really turned us into a battleground. Wow. You go, I think that whole area of competing ideas is huge. I expect that to be a future topic. But in the meantime, how do we let go of the hate and the fear? Well, if you wanted to be traditional medicine oriented, you'd like fight it. If you want to be militarily oriented, you'd say fight it. Let's destroy those things. But if you want to read Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, you would go, hey, Christ describes how to release negative patterns from our consciousnesses. And how to add positive ones. Oh, that's cool. And how do you do that? With killing and destroying and No, no. You do it gently and kindly by asking the divine to remove a list of negative characteristics which we would have written on a piece of paper and put on our chest as we recline quietly, and ask for them to be removed from our consciousness. That does not sound like hard work, does not sound like war, and it isn't. It's simply working in consciousness, which is where the roots of our dominant emotions reside. It's where we want to make changes. It's where everything can be created or created anew in a more desirable fashion. I think that we can know, if we want to do a little bit of self-observation, a little bit of mindfulness, not mindlessness, mindfulness, our dominant emotions, we know, or we can know, where we tend to gravitate on a daily basis, depending on what we're talking about. I think a lot of this stuff is context-specific, so how you feel about balancing your checkbook, or changing the oil on your car, or mowing the lawn, or making dinner, or you know, typing an email, are not necessarily the same. But this idea that I'm going to notice what I notice about my emotions and keep a log. Do this for a couple of days and keep a track of the context. I think we'd have a lot of insight into how we function. And then we'd say, okay, now I know what I really want to release from my consciousness. Because we haven't chosen the pharmaceutical, medical, military strategy of fighting our dominant emotions, or controlling them, or demeaning them, I would believe that those emotions and those belief roots that sustain those emotions are much less likely to feel threatened by us. So that would say, if I'm accurate, that their opposition and resistance to our healing is going to be lessened. No. I don't feel threatened. I don't have to defend myself from attack. And it would be so much easier to make that transition. I think we can trust the inherent drive on the part of living beings, not just us, but all living beings, and get that all living beings are actually trying to do what divine consciousness is trying to do for us. If every cell in every living being is motivated to grow, to be nurtured and nourished, to heal, to be protected, to have needs fulfilled, to work, to survive, to be subject to natural rhythms and the law of cause and effect, then I would bet that our dominant emotions are attempts, more or less effective, but are attempts to do these activities. Of course, the variable in it, a variable in our process of aligning with divine consciousness in these activities of growth and so on, is our level of awareness. And if we're controlled by ego, our level of awareness is going to be more ego consciousness than an elevated form of consciousness. And as we elevate our understanding of what works and doesn't work, and certainly I know as a man, this crashing into walls and doing things like that is a very common strategy. And, that didn't work, this worked, that didn't work, and so on. We can be more effective at using our emotions to serve a higher purpose when we learn what works. Not just for that short-term self-gratification, which is really an ego point of view, but what works long-term. Like, yeah. And then we could remove control from the ego and allow it to be our higher selves. One of the most reassuring, now there are so many reassuring things in Christ Returns, but this one, the idea that human beings learn from trial and error. That's how we learn, trial and error. And then demonizing errors is really counterproductive. It puts us at a disadvantage. Why would we do that? We've learned to do that, but it doesn't make any sense, really. So if we can see trial and error as a normal way to live, and so we adjust our direction and distance all the time, I'm adjusting my direction, then we could use our emotions and use them as indicators when we're going off track. Well, we're on some sort of journey in life. We're on our path, and we're going to use our emotions to say, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel right. And then we can adjust. Imagine that we're driving down a highway. And I know this is true in Florida. Interstate 75 has those small embedded reflectors on the highway that if you hit them, they thunk, 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 thunk. You can hear them and you can feel them in the resonating through your body as well. So those things are reflectors at night. You can see them. They're visual, they're auditory, and they're kinesthetic signalers that we are moving out of our lane. So when we experience those signals, we're like, I got to adjust the direction of my vehicle by adjusting the steering wheel. And we continue doing what we were doing, or we move back into our lane. And you've certainly noticed this. If you look further to the left or right of a highway, you're going to see other kind of barriers, either made of cable and or concrete blocks to prevent cars from going off into lakes or rivers or precipices or into wooded areas. Now imagine that we could use our emotions to guide us the same way, just like those signaling devices. You and I know, at least in theory, that, you know what? Brotherly love, unconditional love, respect for other people's self-interest, balanced with our self-interest, that those things are on the path of spiritual growth, which is, in my opinion, really what we want to be doing, and that's the path we want to be on. If we don't have good feelings about the object of our attention, we are drifting away or maybe sharply veering away from our path. We can get back on our path by using our emotions and discovering, trial and error. Okay, I think I want to release this emotion to divine consciousness and take in this new, more positive one. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive, minds, and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.